What's up, everyone? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Bonus Point Podcast, Super Rugby Edition. My name is TJ Olsen, joined by Tavita Halafia, aka Novel Capote, and James Tesserero. Gentlemen, we had a week off. We're refreshed. Had a jam-packed weekend full of rugby. I'm going to jump straight into it and talk about the footy over the weekend, and we'll go in with a rapid recap. So the Chiefs end up sneaking another victory with the final score being 26-24 against the Hurricanes. The Crusaders end the Blues' finals hopes, thank God, winning the match 29-6. The Western Force end up beating the Super Rugby AU favourites, the Reds, in a close matchup, 30-27. And the Rebels keep the Waratahs winless with a final score of 36-25. So let's jump straight in and talk about that matchup first. So both the Waratahs and the Rebels, they're no longer in contention for the Super Rugby AU finals anymore. James, I feel your pain as the Waratahs are kind of mirroring the Chiefs of 2020, having no wins in 2021. So I want to talk to you because obviously you're on the ground. You know everything about the Waratahs, mostly everything. Do you perceive that the Tars will continue to struggle once they enter the Trans-Tasman comp? Or do you think that their gameplay is slightly improved, or they'll be able to muster up some motivation from these losses to give someone a run for their money?
Mate, I'm always pretty optimistic. And although the rugby hasn't been good and the individual performances haven't been good, I also don't think the Tars will be all that competitive in the Trans-Tasman. But I think that they're trending in the right direction for next season, the year after, and the year after. If you have a look at the core of the side, Jake Gordon, Harrison, Angus Bell, Swinton, Parisi, Nawonga Tethasi, they're all 22 and 23 years old. They've all taken some licks this year. And if they can keep the core of that side together, I think that's a year or two away from being competitive and potentially 3 years, 4 years away from being kind of title contenders.
I think I feel you on that one because you look at that squad and there's a lot of very talented players. They just haven't been able to, I guess, find some cohesion or just get on the right foot in a lot of games. But I think there's a big, I guess, promising future for a lot of these Waratahs players and for this side. And we know what happens when the Waratahs get on a roll. But on the Rebels side, we saw Lamani. He really had a standout match in that halfback position. He played a pivotal role in that game, and he's obviously a very strong player for the Fijian international side, and we've now obviously learned that the Fijian and Drua, they're looking to join the Super Rugby competition next year. So, Hala, you being a proud Island man, I want to talk to you about some Island conversations. So, Lamani, someone they should be looking to add to the squad with the Fijian and Drua, or has he found a solid home with that Rebel side?
That's a tough one, man. I think we're going into territory that we all wished happened a long time ago. And now it's finally coming to fruition, which is amazing. Look, I think at the end of the day, proud, if we're from Samoa, Tonga or Fiji, you wanna represent them as much as you can. But I'll be honest, I think he's a good fit in at the Rebels at the moment. Whether or not that's going to help him in the long term, I'm not too sure. I think definitely with Fiji in his sights, maybe being back with the Fijian side could definitely help, at least on a 9-10 level or just combination-wise. But I think looking forward, they haven't really figured out yet how they're going to choose these players, especially for the Moana Pacifica team. But I'm sure the men behind the desk are definitely having a good look at the stock and are making some business moves as we speak right now. And I can say that Totai Kerfu is definitely having his hand in who's coming back. And there may or may not be a few big surprises.
I'm thinking that too because, I mean... You see what the Giltinis did over here in the LA. They bided their time. They waited to announce it, and then you saw the roster, and you were like, "Holy crap!" I kind of feel like that's going to happen the same with these two sides. I think they're really going to make a splash when it comes to these announcements, and I'm just excited to see who they're going to announce for coaching. But I think it's correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's 80% of the players have to be of that island descent. So if they're playing for the Moana Pacifica team, I believe they either have to be a Samoan or of Tongan. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is something that I think is like getting really in depth. I know for sure Dan Leo, who's a former Super Rugby player, went overseas, played for Samoa. He's really put his hand up at the moment. He's really big into the Pacific Island boys being eligible, especially for second tier teams. You know, hopefully he gets involved with this, because I think someone like him, as the backbone of the Moana Pacifica and the Fiji Jua team, will really bring in the players and the coaching staff that's needed to really not just make them a numbers game, but make them a very, very competitive team and organization on both behalves.
Mm-hmm. James, do you have any thoughts on the Fiji aspect? Because I know you spent a lot of time and you coordinate a lot with the people of Fiji, doing a lot of, I guess, community service. You do a boot drive every year. You keep in touch. Well, what are your thoughts on the potential for players for maybe Australia or from other places potentially joining this team?
Mate, I think Lemani's performances for the Rebels is the best justification that Fijian Super Rugby side. A lot of these Fijian players kind of leave the island to find professional opportunities and then develop very, very quickly in a professional setup. If you now have a kind of one-stop shop on the island based out of Fiji that's funneling all the best players to a professional setup and potentially drawing some of the best Fijians back from Europe, I think it's going to be an amazing boost for Fijian rugby. And, mate, I think the Fijian rugby, the Ndrua in the Super Rugby could potentially be like a top two or three side if they recruit immediately.
100%.
I agree with that. Because you see how well they've done in the NRC, and you just the gameplay is just phenomenal, and they just add such a different element to that competition. It's going to be interesting. I'm really going to enjoy that.
Do you lads think that with these two teams going ahead, that this could definitely open up potential Rugby World Cup squads being rather big now, actually getting in big players? Namely, you're going to get guys like Fikitoa or Charlie Biltau, who are now could come back. They've gone and made their money, potentially come back still in rather good form and play for a Moana Pacifica team in Super Rugby.
I think it's possible. I think the people who are going to be in the figureheads are going to be very cognizant of that. And I think they're going to be making sure that if they do open that door, it's not going to be a can of worms or a domino effect. So yeah, I definitely think it's possible. Whether they will, I guess, put rules or laws in something in regarding that, who knows? James, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, mate, I'm not really sure. I'd probably have to have a look at the detail at the moment, but I'm not sure the way that they kind of regulate who comes back. The 80% rule sounds good in theory, but in practice could be difficult.
Well, that 80%... Sorry, James. No, I'm just saying that 80% rule is real interesting because, I mean, technically, Nella Tupou can go play for Moana Pacifica. He's born and raised in Tonga.
Yeah. oh, man, can you imagine?
That would be awesome. Look, I'm just starting the chat now. That's all I'm doing because in my head, I'm thinking this Fiji and Moana Pacifica team, like, you're talking a lot of players who, if it doesn't knock their eligibility to play for a tier one, you know, if that's a way to promote your country of birth, you're sort of asking why not now, and that could just come down to a dollar value 100%.
Well, I think that's a good point to make is the dollar value is because Ken Laban's from he's a spokesperson in New Zealand rugby is to say the least, but he said that he's not really confident that New Zealand rugby has the backbone to support a team so like Moana Pacifica. So say if they were to have a average performance in year one and year two, and they didn't get stadiums at capacity and things like that, he doesn't believe that New Zealand rugby will hold up their end of the bargain after that 2-year agreement. So that's, I think the dollar value is really going to play a part, and their success is really going to play a part in that. Definitely. So We'll see.
But... Well, lads, let's win the lotto, put our money together, and let's make rugby great again.
I'm always down for that. I think the amount of dreams I've had where I've won lotto, I've won some type of money, and I've just like built like a rugby like facility that is just like top notch. Oh man, I love it. But let's move on. We'll talk about the Reds versus Force game, because the Sea of Blue, they were very happy to get the win at home before they had to go into a mandatory lockdown. So that's one way to end your fun and then go into a lockdown. But we knew this wasn't the Reds' best game, but this is a big win for the Western Force. It was a big confidence builder heading into the Super Rugby AU semifinals. Hulla, we know that the Force will now take on the Brumbies in the semis, and if they were to win that game, they would take on the Reds again in the finals. So was this the win that they need to get the right mindset heading into the semi-final?
Of course. 100%. They, you know, I think, I don't think they win at all, but I definitely think it maybe changes the score. If I'm wrong and they do beat the Brumbies, like, what a turnaround. That's a big turnaround. It's a great, and you know what? They were persistent. They were patient. And not to take it away from them, there were some terrible captain's calls in the last minute to win the game. And so, you know, it definitely, you know, there's a win going into a semifinal is great, but it wasn't like that they completely outperformed the Reds, who had a bad day at the office and made some very questionable calls when the time needed a smart, logical call, like JC's been doing.
Well, let's stay on that, because they started off business as usual, the Reds, leading 21 points to 7, and then ended up having some interesting performances and interesting choices in the second half. Not only were the Reds quite passive in defense, I believe that the win came down to the Western Force getting into that arm wrestle style match that we've spoken about, that they're able to do, really disrupting the Reds' set piece and keeping the Reds on the back foot. So, James and Huller, I want to get both of your opinions on this. So, do you think that the Brumbies or the Force should focus their energy on doing that in the Reds, disrupting their set piece as much as possible, putting them into an arm wrestle type of situation and just keeping them there? Or is it just a done deal for the Reds? Will they be ready to go?
Mate, I think some of the Reds week to weekend at set piece were simply just lapses in concentration. And not signs of anything like systemic that is a problem that other teams can exploit. The Reds kind of been going so, like they fell asleep a few times at set piece and in defence against the Force. The Force were playing with nothing to lose, and mate, I don't read too much into that loss. I think the kind of once the Reds hit a final, I think they'll be as up for it as whoever they play. And I think they're the most talented and probably only behind the Brumbies in terms of being well-drilled and organised. So that doesn't change anything to me. Mate, you heard it here first about 5 weeks ago that the West Force would finish well and win a couple of games.
I was waiting for this.
And they were winless at the time, and it probably sounded like a silly comment. But I think we all agreed that with the veterans they have, the lack of continuity they had to start the season, that they'd probably finish well. They'd rattle a couple of the top sides and might sneak into the top three. And if people rewind the tape, I think we picked this here about 4 or 5 or 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think we were pretty spot on, except for one pick that I'm going to talk about in a game later. But don't worry, Hull, we'll get to it. But Hull, what are your thoughts on the Western Force and the Reds mindset? Just a lapse in judgment. They'll be back next week, as James.
Look, it's like the fight game. You know, you play rugby long enough, you're going to take a loss somewhere along the line. And that's just what happened. There's nothing there that I didn't look. You know, if you're going to blame anyone, you just the shots at goal, the two shots for penalties that they completely chose the scrums for. That was just silly play. You take those points, but other than that, I think like James summed it up perfectly. There's nothing that's systematic to look into. And look, let's be honest. The Brumbies have tried twice this year and failed twice. because, like James said, the Reds are just a more talented team. I think their bench is definitely a lot better, and I think the force going into the Brumbies, they're going to be confident, but they haven't shown anything to make me change my mind that the Brumbies aren't going to meet the Reds.
Yeah, I'm the same as you guys.
But look, I'm hoping so because I'm sick of the Brumbies. They're the Australian Crusaders. So
yeah, I mean, they're pretty successful. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So come on, Force.
Like, yeah, if we could see Folletti get a win over the Brumbies, I mean, I'd be pretty happy with that.
Good. And then pumped against the Reds. I just want to make sure that was clear.
I was Maltese riding on that high. There you go.
Dude, I put this on at the beginning of the year. Do you know how close I am? I'm so very close.
All right, before Haller blows a gasket, let's move across the ditch and we'll talk about the Chiefs versus Hurricanes match, because the Chiefs have now secured a spot in the finals, but they still have to face a hungry and talented Blues side this week. So I'm very cognizant of that. They've still got a pretty interesting match, the Battle of the Bombays. It always comes down to the wire. I know that both sides are going to get up for this game, but James, you're a pretty good coach in my opinion. I think you are. So I want to get your coaching opinion on this one. Should the Chiefs relish the opportunity to go up against the Blues in this Battle of the Bombays, preparing for a tough Crusaders match, getting all their best players in the lineup, having a crack, or should they rest all their best players, keep them fresh for the final and then see how they go the following week?
Mate, I think the only chance that the Chiefs have got to beat the Crusaders in a final is if they hit it at full steam with a heap of confidence behind them, confidence and combinations. And to do that, you've got to throw everything at this final match. And you throw everything at this final match knowing that there's a chance that maybe McKenzie gets injured, maybe you drop a couple of kind of unfortunate injuries that make it impossible to win the following week. But I think that's just a risk you take. The alternative of dogging it this week, picking a second string out and then hoping to be able to turn it on against the Crusaders, I don't think that is possible to win. So I think there's risk both ways, but I think you've got to throw everything at this match and keep building the momentum that they've got right now.
I agree 100% with you, because I look at it two ways. You, like you said, is you could rest all your best players and then try and do what no team has done before, is come in and just try and beat the Crusaders as fresh as possible, but just flat. But the whole Chiefs run has been riding on their confidence that they've been building and building and building from week after week, mm-hmm. of just mm-hmm. playing with that mana, that heart. That's why they have their Chiefs mana slogan. That's what they're all about. And once they lost Sam Kane, there were a million people going, yep, it's done. They're going to do 2 years in a row and they suck. But Brad Weber, mm-hmm. Damian McKenzie, and a few other players have just been riding that high of that first win, and they just keep building on top of it. So I agree with you on that one. I think they've just got to have a crack at it and just hope for the best. But we did see Damian McKenzie at fullback have a cracker of a game. As Sir John Kerwin is saying, when he does play at 10, he plays like a League 10. And when he's at fullback, he just goes nuts. But he ended up kicking the penalty kick to win the game 2 weeks in a row. But you also had Jordy Barrett, ice in his veins, man. It was awesome. But Jordy Barrett, he played a great game as well against McKenzie. And you've obviously got the rising star in Will Jordan playing for the Crusaders. So a lot of chatter has been going on regarding the most informed fullback from this competition. So, Hala, I want to come to you with this one, because we've obviously been watching these games very closely. Mm-hmm. Out of these three, who's the informed fullback right now?
You start Barrett for sure. 100%. You start Barrett. I just think, look, Damian McKenzie's the perfect guy you want to come on at between 45 and 55 minutes. Mm-hmm. Because he just does something. He does something that no one else in that All Blacks team can do. And that's literally something from nothing. You want Barrett there to orchestrate at the back there. If he needs to slot into 10, it's seamless. And in regards to Will Jordan, he's still going to pay his time a little more. Bring him off the bench, maybe start him on the wing, a couple of easier test matches. Bring him off the bench just to sort of get that pace up his sleeve. I think he's definitely a 15 in waiting, and he could go down as one of the best fullbacks. I thoroughly believe that. But right now, Barrett's your go-to guy at 15. D-Mac off the bench. And I think they're going to start hitting some form and start icing some teams if these guys can stay healthy and just do their jobs when they're playing.
So this is a question that I want to actually float to both of you off the cuff, because this has been one that's been, I guess, floating around New Zealand and around the Super Rugby sphere and across the world, actually, because this other player is playing in Japan and he's currently undefeated, aka Beauden Barrett, and he's doing pretty good. And a lot of people are raising the question that if he comes back, because I think he has his semi-final this weekend, and then he's got quarter-final and then a semi-final, and he could be back by the time the Trans-Tasman competition starts. So a lot of people are saying that if, because the way Beauden Barrett's been playing, he's coming back off a sabbatical, how fresh he is, he has potential to slot into that fullback position or that 10 position, or come off the bench for the All Blacks. So if you're All Blacks selectors, do you put him into that squad? Because me personally, I think you've got to reward the people that are in New Zealand and who have been grinding it out the hard yards. And although it is technically a sabbatical, I think these people have been playing in a New Zealand competition for this long. You've got to reward that. So what are your guys' thoughts on Beauden Barrett coming back and potentially being in that All Blacks team for test match season?
I'll let you go, James.
Mate, if he can play Trans-Tasman and can prove his form against other Kiwi players, with the background he's got, I think you can easily select him. I don't think you can fast track him in without playing any domestic footy. As good as he is, and simply the fact that there's kind of amazing depth below him, and you can pick players who maybe aren't as experienced or credentialed, but can certainly offer different things and highly talented and do the job. I think it's a luxury to not have to fast track him back in. Tarzel with Michael Hooper, Wallabies. And the Wallabies may decide that they don't have the luxury of depth below Hooper, and they may need to fast track him into the Wallabies without domestic rugby. So I think that's, if I was an All Black selector, I'd decide that if he plays domestic, even if it's the last 4 to 5 weeks, he'd be eligible.
Okay.
I'll tell you what, I totally agree with what James just said. But I think he'll be in the squad regardless. Whether he plays or not will be completely different, because, you know, they're starting to groom. They'll be thinking World Cup now. So having someone like Beauden Barrett in your squad with no intention to play, but merely just being that senior head there, really grinding it out with those youngins, I think will definitely happen. But I agree. Unless he plays Trans-Tasman, they've got all the players that they need for this year at least. Playing very good rugby, very, very good rugby. So he's not needed.
Yeah.
It's 10 and 15.
And look, what was that, sorry, James?
The 10 and 15 position are both stacked. That's before you bring Barrett back.
There is a
genuine selection delay before you consider Barrett.
Definitely.
I don't know if fast tracking Barrett maybe remove some of the dilemmas. But I think that's the healthy competition at the moment is the strength of New Zealand rugby. So I think we've kind of in agreement there.
Yep.
So what you're saying is, because we're missing a few locks out of injury, we should throw Beauden at lock. Okay. All right. Let's do that.
Okay, the Barrett brothers at lock.
They're
bloody tall enough.
Oh man, they're gigantic. All right, we'll move on. We'll talk about our last game, the Blues versus Crusaders. I mean, this rivalry has been in history for eons, but Hala, I want to talk to you for a second, because you and I were both Chiefs fans at heart, and at the beginning of the year and during the season, you have been predicting the Blues to win it all this season, and it was basically in the bag. And I want to know why you think the Blues had such a drop off, because they've got obviously got a loss of leadership with Paddy Toops out of the picture. They've got some key players jumping into positions where maybe it's not their strong suit, and they can't handle the pressure, or they're just dealing with different situation. What happened to your boys?
Raz, I don't know. They just They just fell off. Braz, they were an alcoholic going to AA, and then they just fell off the wagon, G. They were on top of the world, had a big night out with the missus, ended up, you know, having a few wines, which went into the vodkas, into some scotch, and they're waking up the next day trying to live life, and they just can't do it.
Yeah.
Bro, I think in all seriousness, I think there's a big attitude shift. You can see it on the field. I'm really – the urgency's gone, and it's impatience now. And you can see that for their penalty counts with a ruck and maul times. And you, even in their set pieces, there just seems to be – it's not an urgency. It's an impatient – it's almost like there's no cohesion. And that's something that's really stuffing them, I think, big time. You know, we discussed the Auckland Blues having possibly one of the greatest forward packs in the Super Rugby comp this year. And they really haven't been effective at all. And if anything, they, you know, towards the last four or five games, they've been put on their butts, bro. Like, quite literally. So, I think, you know, I don't know. But it looks to me someone, you know, and, you know, I like to look into that sort of the psychological aspect of it. You know, a bit of bickering on the field. Seems to be a lack of respect for the jersey and each other. And I think Patrick Tuipulotu's really shown how much he is a leader in that organization. And not having him around has been, you know, detrimental. And I just think that they're just choosing the wrong players at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, they've had a bit of a debacle when it comes to the halfback position, which I'm not saying that it's an easy decision, because like, you've got three quality halfbacks and they've just been bouncing back and forth. Oteti hasn't been having the best weeks, but that could be a factor. Is the halfback bouncing, and there's a few things. Like I thought Dalton did pretty well as captain on the weekend. I think he tried to do the best he could, and I think he made some pretty good decisions. I think Rico's trying to step up into that aspect, but when you think of it, he's still a pretty young man, and I think when you look for your leadership positions, it's generally not the 13 jersey you're looking for. You're not looking at that spot for that leadership spots.
No, yeah, they're looking at his brother, and his brother isn't doing anything. Like, you are on the cusp of possibly securing an All Blacks jersey, and he's done nothing. And that's not me trying to be mean. That's you. This is your moment to rise. And some people, some players, just aren't those players, man. They just, you know, head down, butt up, do the work, and you know, and that comes down to, you know, the leadership team and what the coaching staff all think. You know, who is in that, who puts them in that leadership team, but. Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm shocked because I had Oteti Black possibly being an All Black starter this year. Just cross that one off my mark.
I will say they do play Italy. So that's not to say that Italy are the worst nation in the world, but they're not the best.
Right, they're going to start. Will Jordan is going to be a 10-15 convert, mark my words. So
that'll be interesting.
When that game comes up, I wouldn't be surprised if Will Jordan starts playing a second receiver role from fullback. But yeah, who knows? All I'm saying, Blues, is, you know, come on, Blues. But also, don't win this week.
Yes. I'd personally slot David Harvili in there because he's been doing so well. But
so good. Yeah.
So good, but we'll move on because I want to get both of your opinions on this last bit, and it's about the captain's referral rule, because it's been somewhat of a controversial rule, something Scott Barrett mentioned over the weekend that he's not a big fan of, and some people have been saying it under their breath by the looks of it. So some people say it opens up a bit of hypocrisy, because the same act that they are using the captain's referral on happens, as some people say, it's happening all day, sir. But there's also people saying that they don't like it, that it's limited to after the 75th minute. But others are saying that they enjoy the suspense because it adds another element to the game and an entertainment factor. People are sitting on the edge of their seat going, ooh, will they get this or will they lose it? So, James, I'll come to you first. Do you think the referral, should it be kept or should it be scrapped?
Mate, I like it. I think there's certain things like knock on, forward pass, out of bounds, which can be very much black and white and kind of objective. And if a captain thinks that the referee may have missed a forward pass, a knock on, or out of bounds, things like that I think can be referred to and have another look. And I like what that adds. And most times if a referee misses something like that, they'll be quite open to saying, I got that one wrong, and every referee does it. There's a heap of other stuff in around the game which is very grey and subjective. And it's a bit of a pointy end of the wedge that you start allowing challenges. Maybe you start allowing challenges to ruck entries, which are a bit subjective. Maybe you start allowing referrals to hands in the ruck. There's got to be clear guidelines about where it starts and stops. But I think for things which are black and white, getting the best result without slowing the game down too much is always.
Well, what are your thoughts?
Oh, he took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah, I love it. I think it's great. And I've really got nothing to add because I totally agree. Scott Barrett's just, you know, mate, shut up. Just shut up.
That's great chat. That's great,
dude. Because he's the dirtiest dude in a line out, right? And he gets caught on it, and he does his nah, buddy. Like, we know what you're doing, right? Your system works. We get it. Okay, just because Richie got away with it for his whole life doesn't mean you get to too because you're wearing the same jersey.
Why have you got to throw the king under the bus? What are you doing, mate?
Mate, come on. I applaud him for not. That's a skill that only he has. No one, maybe George Gregan has it too, because he's a bit, his boots went missing in those rucks. That's all I'm saying.
you're providing James ammunition for next time, so we can just keep calling him a cheat, and I just have to take it because it's 100% accurate. But let's
I was about to say, I was like, come on, man. We all know he's not playing anymore. We're good.
Yeah, I don't know. He's running triathlons. He's doing tough mudders. He's flying helicopters. I don't know.
He's probably cheating in the tough mudders too.
I love how James is like, yeah, no doubt. Yeah. So do you reckon he's got a cab lined up on one side of the field, and he just like goes through the first course, jumps in, and then he just like comes through the trees, and he's like, yep, I just won by 20 minutes. There we go. Yeah,
sprays himself with some mud.
I will say though, I will share this. I don't think I've ever shared this with anyone outside my family, but I do believe my dad did that with the Sydney, the City to Surf. Me and my sister 100% think me and my sister have this inkling that we 100% think that he just like ran the first part of the race, left, jumped in a cab, got there, and then because he, like, I'm not knocking him, but I'm pretty sure he can't run it that fast.
Dad, so you were 2 minutes slower than the world record. I was pretty fit back in the day.
That's my conspiracy of the day. So yeah, we'll leave it there. But I'm pretty sure I'm 100% right on that one. But we'll leave it there. So, I don't know. I don't know. I'm all for the captain's referral. I think it adds another element to the game. I believe you are right. I think that we should just let it play out and see how it goes in the next couple of seasons. Dude, and then if it doesn't end up working, then we'll maybe move on. But
100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%.
We'll go there. But it's called the bonus point for a reason. This weekend is going to be a pretty historic event. We are going to have a double header at Eden Park, and the Blues are going to take on the Chiefs, and also the Wahine, the women, are going to take on their first Super Rugby match. The Chiefs, Waitomo Chiefs, I believe it is. So I believe Waitomo are sponsoring the Waikato team, and the Blues are going to be taking on. Man, they're stacked with Black Ferns in those two teams. But it's a one-off match this season. Both clubs are committed to developing a Super Rugby women's team and program in the future. So I want to talk to you guys first about what you think of this matchup, because we've all been involved in women's rugby. We know how monumental this is, but what do you think this does for the dynamic of women's rugby in New Zealand, Hala, and then we'll go to James.
Well, I mean, they're already a powerhouse. So you add a domestic Super Rugby women's competition, mm-hmm. and you're just asking for, you know, some really big dominance. I think the one thing that, and you know, this is no diss to the New Zealand organization for in their women's, I think they lacked what Australia has with their women's and their women's development. You know, the the cross code of the women from league to union quite high in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And I just think there was a big lack of athletes that really, if they were in another system, maybe in an Australian system, would just have a lot more chances than they're currently getting. So, you know, you look at what Australian rugby's doing, and Rugby Australia's doing with the women's competition. And, you know, at least some club teams in Brisbane, they've got two women's teams playing weekly club rugby. In New Zealand, that really isn't the case in that they've got their club competition, but there's really that misstep between being a club player and being in at least a development squad. Mm-hmm. And that's something I really admire about Rugby Australia. So I think, they're already a dominant force on international rugby. So adding this domestic competition can only strengthen relationships and hopefully bring out some more athletes, female athletes to try rugby in New Zealand. I'd like to see those numbers go up, and I'd really like to see the percentage of players that come in to play some club rugby and get developed and, you know, potentially play some super rugby. I think it's going to be amazing. I also think too, if it goes ahead and they do get behind it, we're going to see international domestic women's rugby really blow the roof off. And I think that's going to happen because they're going to be men's and women's games, you know, yeah. Eden Park or down at the House of, you know what I mean? And I think that's going to be a catalyst for big change, which, you know, I'm here for it. We all are. We love women in sport. This is great.
Yeah. I will echo that because I think Eloise Blackwell, she said something about that. She said that in New Zealand, there's currently a big divide from, I guess, the club to like the high performance sector. Like you've mm-hmm. obviously got Farrah Palmer Cup, which they play in, which is their NPC competition. But when you see the training aspects and the high performance and just the gap between that is mm-hmm. they really want something. And I agree with you. I think that Australia has done an amazing job, especially with the Super W. James, what are your thoughts on this whole, I guess, spectacle?
Mate, having a bit of experience at that kind of area of Australian women's rugby, at the club level, you've usually got a couple of Wallaroos in each club team, playing with a couple of former experienced players, playing with a couple of girls who are entirely new to the game. So at the club level, the top players are kind of coaching and mentoring girls as much as they're focused on development, which is wow. for growth and is what it is. But I think in the fairness of the top team, they've got to at some stage step up into a kind of state or a provincial side to be able to focus on a high performance environment and their own development and pushing themselves further. So I think that extra tier club and below international is very, very necessary.
I definitely agree with that because I think Eloise, she said that she was lucky because a lot of the players in the Blues, they're all in Auckland and they can all get together and they can all do their HP training, their high performance training together. Right. But whether if you're in the Waikato side, you've got Counties Manukau, which is like half an hour away from Auckland.
They're a part of four in the morning.
Yeah, they're a part of the Chiefs, I guess, regions, which is kind of tough for them, but they can't just go and drive down or just like meet somewhere at a gym and go do high performance training or something like that. So I think the more of that is created, I think will be better. I think something was raised due to the scheduling, because if they were to mirror the Super Rugby season, they start preseason during their Kiwi summer. Mm. Not really getting a break after they just played Farrah Palmer Cup probably about a month ago. And then once they finish Super Rugby season, they go and play their club season. And then once they finish their club season to, I guess, be noticed or qualify for a Farrah Palmer Cup team, they have to go play Farrah Palmer Cup. And then it's basically just year round. And a lot of these people, they have full-time jobs as well. And you can't really just keep doing that consistently all year and then taking time off to play games and stuff like that. So I think something potentially has to be done in New Zealand about the scheduling, especially if they're going to be I guess, keeping the Farah Palmer Cup. So I'm interested to see what happens, but I think you both raise really good points. I think there has to be, less disparity from that, I guess, that upper echelon to that.
Let the women play.
Yeah. So
Let the women play.
But I think any way they can get it done, I think is a plus, because you want to see, like, I know this goes back years, but you saw how well it transcended in the WNBA once they created a professional league. And then now you see collegiate women players now vying for a spot to play in the WNBA, and they're not getting paid millions and millions of dollars, but there is a professional league. And I think there's always ways to grow. So, yeah, I don't know. Do you guys have anything else to add on the women's aspect?
I feel sorry for every international women's team once a domestic competition in New Zealand for women is established.
Well, I don't know. Because the women overseas, they have the Six Nations. So I think they've got like the women's Six Nations, which is pretty good. But yeah, I kind of agree. Once you unleash the Hulk, he's the Hulk. He's going to destroy everything in his past. So it's going to be interesting. I really hope they do, I guess, merge it with the Super W, because I would love to see a Waratahs women's side go up against like a Chiefs or a 100%. Crusaders or something like that.
Yeah,
like that.
Sorry, Ellie. I don't know how you're going to go that one.
Yeah, that would be interesting, but. Yeah, I don't know. I think having two women's sides in Australia is just a win in general at a club level. That's insane,
dude.
That's,
man, that's... I just yeah, dude. It would be so good to see that Trans Tasman Super W.
Mm-hmm. That'd be awesome.
Oh, yeah. How good! How that'd good!
Be good. That'd be good. That'd be good.
Needs to say, also be very intuitive. A very good start would be when if Super Rugby ever goes back to normal and Trans Tasman plus the Pacifica plus Drua
in an
Australian Derby W game.
That would be cool. I would,
if Reds played the Waratahs, you'd add a women's game to that, and that'd add a lot to the local derbies. That'd give them about eight games in stadiums off the back of, and rather than play them as curtain raisers, you play them immediately after.
Yep.
So yeah. While everyone's got their blood up after watching a Reds versus Waratahs game, they stay around. You watch the women, and the same kind of rivalry and intensity spills out over to the women's game, which would be a good result.
I remember like one year at Souths, they played Prems at like 3 o'clock or 3:20.
No one cares about Souths,
3:25. Thanks, mate. I appreciate it. But I think they had one of the Colts games following after that. And then like, I think one of the years they just wanted to increase attendance at Colts games, and they put them right after. And it was just a crowd full of people that had been on the piss all day and watching like a Premier Colts game. The crowds were insane. So I could only imagine getting people who are like three or four beers deep, or maybe 50, and then they just go ahead and they watch a women's rugby game after that. They would, the atmosphere would be awesome. I would love it. So yeah, I'm all for that idea.
I'm here for it.
We keep putting all this great info up, and we keep doing it for free.
Free,
for
I know.
Steal. I know.
we need to start a consultation, a rugby consultation service.
Yeah, I'm down for that. That sounds incredible. But
have we lost James?
I think so. But we're finished anyway. So yeah, it's end of the podcast anyway, because we've just gone through and had a good chat. But yeah. Boys, here he's back. So I think all for women's rugby. We'll round it off there. I can't wait to watch this match. Well, I'm going to try and see if I can find it. I think the only place that is showing it is Sky Sport. I'll see if I can use VPN, the VPN and find a way to watch it. But good luck to the Chiefs this weekend. I hope you smash the Blues.
Let's go, boys!
In both matches. We'll see how we go. But yeah, boys, it's good to have you back. I think we lost James again due to internet connections. He hasn't paid his bill. But Hala, any final words?
No, I'm just looking forward to some rugby. And can I just say, it's been great watching club rugby. I'm not getting much sleep on the weekends. Friday morning's a bit of a hassle for me, but I'm loving watching the rugby. And congratulations to South's rugby, who got their first victory on the weekend.
Wow.
Played a great game. And I'm only saying this because the captain's a great friend of mine. Luke Salmore, attractive young man. You attractive in those short shorts, and you look good on the weekend.
That was the most condescending congratulations I've ever heard in my life. That was awful.
Oh, mate. Dude, can I actually, James, have you been able to see any of the Brisbane? Oh, he's gone. The hospital cut. Have you been watching the two club competitions? Because I've got to.
It's here and there.
Dude, I've got to say, I think they're starting to even out a little bit, the New South Wales and the Queensland teams. I'm enjoying it.
I think I noticed that the first time we went and watched when the club rugby came back on. I saw that there was a bit of a difference in the level in New South Wales. I think it was just like a smidge better. And then once like the game started to roll on, I watched week two and it looked quite similar. I think it's starting to get a roll on. It's good.
I'm loving it.
Oh, now I want McDonald's. All right, guys. Thank you for tuning into the Bonus Point Podcast. I appreciate everyone tuning in. We are excited to be back. Can't wait for all the matches. We can't wait to talk finals rugby. I don't think James is with us anymore due to his internet connection. But everyone have a safe week, safe weekend. Tune in next week at 8 p.m. on Tuesday, Pacific Standard Time. Have a good evening, guys.
Peace.